Tataha. Thereafter. Agni. Fire. Marutau. And air. Rajan. O king. Amunchan. They emitted. Mukataha. From their mouths. Rusha. Out of anger. Mahim. The earth. Nirvirutam. Treeless. Kartum. To make. Samvartakaha. The fire of devastation. Eva. Like. Achaye. At the time of devastation. So translation, my dear king. At the time of devastation, Lord Shiva admits fire and air from his mouth out of anger. To make the surface of the earth completely treeless, the Prachetas also emitted fire and air from their mouths. So you can repeat. My dear king. At the time of devastation. Lord Shiva emits fire and air from his mouth. Out of anger. To make the surface of the earth completely treeless. The Prachetas also emitted fire and air. From their mouths. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai. In this verse, Vidura is addressed as Rajan, which means, O king. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that Adira never becomes angry because he is always situated in devotional service. Advanced devotees can control their senses. Therefore, a devotee can be addressed as Rajan. A king controls and rules in various ways among citizens. Similarly, one who can control his senses is the king of his senses. He is a Swami or Goswami. The Swamis and Goswamis are therefore sometimes addressed as Maharaja or King. King. King for a day. Anyway, so, Kachatogni Maruta Rajan Amunshan Mukato Rusha Mahim Anir Virudam Kartum. Sanvataka Ivakchi Ye. So Omagana Timbadanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshul and Midikam Yena Tasmai Shigurvena Mahat. So obviously what we're going to talk about today is anger and a manifestation of anger. Of course, anger in the material world is very easy to understand, not very easy to control. But it's very easy to understand because it comes from frustrated lust. I mean, let's think of the different times that we get angry. Just honestly about myself. I get angry at the computer sometimes, which is kind of stupid because it's not very productive. And sometimes I get angry at disciples. So why... Because why do we get angry at a computer? Let's analyze that. Because we want to control, you know, the computer gives us the illusion that we become more powerful or we can control more things or learn more things or get more knowledge. And when our desire becomes frustrated in that regard, we get angry. Jayato visha pumsang sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kama. Kama krodha vijayate. That's a verse we all know, that contemplating sense objects, one gets attached. And from attachment, then comes lust, and lust comes anger. So you see that, like with computers, or sometimes we're driving with someone in a car, and someone is slow in front of them, or cuts them off, and then they get angry. I was with one devotee, he's not a devotee here, don't worry, it's not anyone you know. And we were going on the highway or something. Someone cut them off, and Maharaj, he said to me, Maharaj, let me stop and beat the person up. And I was thinking, you know, that's not going to be very productive. And in Australia, it's very interesting in Australia. I don't know if anyone's here been to Australia. But we're driving, and I noticed that the people never honk their horns in Australia. You know, in America, we honk our horns quite a bit. And I asked him, why don't you honk your horns? He said, because people get so angry, they come out of the car and beat you up every time you honk a horn. Now, in India, it's the opposite. In India, you press a button to stop the horn. Right? Not really. But, I mean, you got to keep your finger on the horn all the time. Just like I drive in India. I drive a scooter. And I have to just keep it down all the time. But in any case, so I see many instances, you know, where either I get angry or someone gets angry. It's just because we were thinking ourselves to be the controller, or we had something that we wanted to possess, or we lost something, and therefore we get angry. And of course, that anger doesn't give us what we want, which is really interesting. It actually is counterproductive in most instances. Now, it's not going to get you somewhere faster. It's not going to help you control someone. It just, the person rebels when you get angry with them. Or you just lose time getting angry, and you destroy your health at the same time. So that's material anger. But there's also spiritual anger. Now, where does spiritual anger come from? First of all, it comes from several different places. One is compassion. You know, one wants to... And even in the material world, there's justified anger. One wants to protect someone. For example, if a child is crossing the street and there's a cars are coming, then you just grab the child, come on, like that. And that's good. I mean, that's to protect the child. Or spiritually, if we see someone is in deep, dark nescience, and then we get angry, not out of compassion, out of love for the person. So that's also there. Another manifestation of anger is when you really love someone and someone is attacking that person or someone is blaspheming the person. For example, Srila Prabhupada would get angry if someone was presenting Mayavadi philosophy. And so the same thing with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He would sometimes... grab an impersonalist by the scruff of his, not neck exactly, but by his collar. And he would say, why are you teaching this nonsense? Or another time he said, you know, why are you wearing a shirt? Why not just wear a piece of cotton? You know, so he was known as Nrisimha Guru because he would manifest his anger out of love for Krishna. He didn't want to see Krishna criticized. Like when you love someone, if someone goes to hurt them, or criticize them, blaspheme them, or something like that. It's inappropriate to get angry, and that's out of love. It's not out of frustration. The only type of anger we're trying to avoid is the anger out of frustrated lust. You know, the desire to possess, the desire to control, the desire to be the center of everything. You know, I didn't get enough attention, nobody loves me, and nobody appreciates me. Just like one year I was GBC chairman, and after the year was over, nobody said thank you, gave me a gold watch, or nothing. Just like, all right, bye-bye. So I got angry because, you know, I didn't get enough appreciation. Actually, I got sad. So appropriate anger is being exhibited here, but there's actually another point, too. It's being exhibited here by the Prachetas. Why? Their anger was to provide agricultural land for people to grow vegetables. Because the world was covered with trees, there was no vacant land, everything was taken by the trees. So, however, there's one interesting point here, their anger got out of control. Because it's described here in the verse that they wanted to make the world nirvirudam, treeless. In other words, they didn't want to just clear some land for agriculture. They want to get rid of all the trees. So why is that? That it's very interesting that sometimes we may have justified anger, as the Prachetas had, but that anger may get out of control. And then when it gets out of control, it's no longer justified. So one has to be very careful when they're dealing with anger. And there's other examples of this too. Like we have Dhruva Maharaj. And Dhruva Maharaj's brother was killed by the Yakshas. What was his brother's name? It starts with a U. I forget his name. Anyway, his brother was killed, Uttama. Uttama was his name. See? I remember too. So Uttama was his name, and he was killed by the Yakshas. And then what happened with Dhruva? He started to kill all the Yakshas. He was destroying all the Yakshas just for the sake of one. And finally, Lord Brahma had to stop the whole scene. He had to say, you know, you can't, it's not appropriate to do that. You know, it's appropriate to kill or attack the one Yaksha who killed his brother, that's fine. But you just can't hold everybody responsible for what's happened. So even here's a pure devotee. I mean, Dhruva was obviously a pure devotee. The point I'm making, actually, is that one has to be very careful with anger, even if one is a very advanced pure devotee. Because it can overcome you. So Dhruva was a pure devotee, and he became overcome with anger. And, of course, even in the Supreme Lord's pastimes, of course, Krishna is never controlled by anger, but he sometimes manifests a particular pastime so it appears like he's overcome with anger. When Lord Nrsingadev killed Hiranyakashipu, he was angry, that's for sure. And that was appropriate anger. And so he killed the Hiranyakashipu, and he was angry and killing all the Rakshasas, and not Rakshasas, but all the demons. They weren't Rakshasas. It's a different type of demon. They were actually demons, daityas. And so he was killing them all, and basically he was so angry that nobody could pacify him. He was just like, and the whole universe was sort of threatened at that particular juncture. And Lakshmi was scared of him. She was scared of her husband. Lord Brahma was scared of his boss. Lord Shiva was scared. Everybody was scared. And finally, he put this poor little boy forward for Lord Maharaj to pacify. And then he became pacified. So, of course, that's a pastime. But it indicates to us that anger is a very dangerous thing to deal with. I mean, even if it is a very appropriate thing, it is very, very dangerous to be utilizing anger. I mean, it has to be used in our service at some particular juncture. Like Lord Shiva, he has the service of destroying the universe. I mean, obviously there has to be anger there. The Lord has to deal with the demons with his Sudarshan Chakra disc. The devotees have to deal with the impersonalists. So the question is, of course, as far as Krishna, I'm not going to give Krishna any advice how to deal with his anger. But as far as ourselves, you know, obviously, I'm not that proud yet. So as far as ourselves, how to deal with that anger, very, very interesting. We should continually be thinking of whether it is appropriate to continue to express the anger. In other words, you take some time out, you do some deep breathing, and you think, does this anger please Krishna? In other words, that's really the ultimate standard, that you accept things that please Krishna and you reject things that displease Krishna. And you have to have a very strong intelligence. That's really, Krishna consciousness is called Buddhi Yoga. Buddhi means intelligence. It's not called mana yoga, mind yoga, or, you know, sensory yoga. It's buddhi yoga, because the intelligence has to be very strong to ascertain whether or not someone's activities, and that's not only including anger, you know, I'm including any sort of activity, you know, any sort of activity, any sort of strategy for preaching Krishna consciousness, anything we do. One's intelligence has to be very strong and to ascertain whether it is actually in line with Krishna consciousness. We should be asking ourselves that at every moment, whether that is in line with our Krishna consciousness, in line. And ultimately, we should be thinking in terms of whether it is pleasing to Srila Prabhupada. I mean, as members of the Krishna consciousness movement, our judgments should be based upon that particular paradigm. You know, is this pleasing to Srila Prabhupada? Because we're making judgments throughout the day, not only insofar as anger is concerned. So many judgments are being made. So many decisions are being made throughout the day. So we should think, what would Srila Prabhupada... So in order to understand that, we have to understand Srila Prabhupada. I mean, it's interesting. We give this one course about understanding Srila Prabhupada, and we talk about illusory Prabhupadas. You know, because people have their Prabhupadas that was never Prabhupada. You know, there's like in name, like the Ritvik Prabhupada. You know, and people get so bewildered by these things. Like they talk about the final order they have, that Prabhupada gave some instruction that was time-bound, that while he was on the earth, certain people would initiate for him, you know, as... And actually the word Ritvik doesn't even mean what people think it means. It means someone who performs a particular sacrifice, a particular time of the year, a seasonal sacrifice. Like if you're going to do a Indra Yajna, which we do regularly at the Krishna Consciousness Movement, then you call for a Ritvik. You mean a seasonal priest, you know, one who does rituals. He's not one who represents the guru, he's one who does karmakanja rituals, basically. So anyway, they take something out of context. So they come up with their whole Prabhupada, and they think that Prabhupada is in favor of them blaspheming devotees all over the world. They come out with even a magazine that says, back to Prabhupada. They haven't even been with Prabhupada, and they want to go back to him. It's like saying, you know, back to somewhere where you've never been. That's impossible. So, and the magazine is dedicated to finding the faults in sincere Vaishnavas. I was happy there was one page dedicated to me, the last issue, in quoting from my classes. I was thinking, wow, at least I made it in the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Previously, they were doing all my other God brothers, and I was feeling left out. Now, at least, you know, I have some prominence. At least, even if no one loves me, at least people know about me. So they published a magazine talking about, and even they had published books, The Thousand Faults of This Vaishnava, or A Thousand Faults of That Vaishnava. And they think that that's Prabhupada, or pleasing to Prabhupada. I mean, they really sincerely think that way. I mean, I'm not doubting their sincerity. I'm doubting their intentions, doubting their motivation, doubting their mentality, but their sincerity, no. You know, what do they say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions? So you can be very sincere. I mean, Ravana was very sincere. And Kumbhakarni was sleeping too much to be sincere. But Aranyakashipu, you know, he's very, very sincere and honest. You know, I want to be the center. I want to be immortal. That's honest. So we're not doubting their honesty or sincerity. But they have this illusory Prabhupada. It's really interesting how people, and they allow their, some people allow their culture that they're born into to sort of color their understanding of Krishna consciousness. So in order to understand who Prabhupada is, or what Prabhupada is, or what he wants, one has to really read a lot about Prabhupada, hear a lot from Prabhupada, and allow Prabhupada to speak for himself, which is really interesting. Because we're talking about this whole thing about hermeneutics. Hermeneutics is not a reference to Herman, a Jewish guy living in Manhattan or anything like that. But it means, how do I... You know, Herman. I had an uncle named Herman. So it refers to how to understand Prabhupada's words. So, I mean, let Prabhupada describe for himself who he is, how we should follow him. Like Prabhupada said, you know, your love for me will be tested how you cooperate. I mean, that's something Prabhupada said over and over again. He didn't say your love for me will be tested how you fight with each other. I mean, he was disgusted, and Śrīla Bhakti Siddhānta Sarasvati Thakura was disgusted by the fighting of his Prabhupada's godbrothers, or Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples. In fact, he left the planet because they were fighting already. They didn't even wait till he left the planet. They were fighting over rooms in the Bagh Bazar temple in Calcutta. You know, who would have a nice room? It's just like, I remember we had a temple in Miami Beach, and people were fighting over who would get the ocean view. Some people had to just look at the hotel on the side. And they're very disturbed, you know. And because I, being the boss, got the ocean view with a balcony. Oh. You got the parking lot, yeah.
I had an ocean.
You had an ocean. She was determined. So, anyway, there. So Prabhupada said, you know, cooperation and love and understanding and unity and diversity is another thing. I mean, sometimes in this movement or in any society, if people are a little different than us, like for example, in the government, you have the Democrats and the Republicans, and they're demonizing each other. I mean, literally. I mean, they don't put horns on each other, but, you know, they criticize each other to the extent that, I mean, even they go after Obama and say that he wasn't born in the United States. You know, or so many things. You know, a personal slander. It's called ad hominem attacks. And so it's really dividing the country. And if you look at the polls, the people in the country are extremely dissatisfied with both parties. You know, look at the approval ratings. It's not that either party has a high approval rating, because they're fighting with each other. I mean, they're not thinking of America the Beautiful, or Amber Waves of Grain, or Purple Mountains Majesty Above the Fruit of... Nobody knows what I'm talking about. That's one of the national anthems. So, and then One Nation Under God with Liberty and Justice for All. Of course, they took that under God out. One Nation Under who else? You know, Under the Brahmajyoti, with Liberty and Justice for All. So people are very dissatisfied. And it's, you know, tearing apart the country now. And really, this is really one of the... And also the sense gratification. Everybody's into the... Not everybody, but many people are into just, like, enjoying themselves and stuff like that. So, and not caring for others. So the country is really being torn apart by different interest groups like that. So in ISKCON, too, we have... What is a unity and diversity? Actually, we're studying that in the GBC. It means that we understand that people will have different... perspectives on how to present Krishna consciousness, not on Prabhupada, you know, who Prabhupada is or what Prabhupada wanted. That perspective is there. You know, Prabhupada wanted us to cooperate and spread Krishna consciousness, and some people will be doing bridge preaching, some people will be doing, you know, really radical preaching, other people will be just very conservative, playing their wampers so loud to destroy your eardrums, but. I'm just joking. But, you know, some people be, like, very conservative. So we have to learn to work with it. That's what will please Prabhupada, to work with each other in a cooperative way. And we don't have to agree with each other. That's not love and cooperation. We have to agree with someone else's method of presentation of Krishna consciousness. But we have to love and appreciate their dedication and following of Srila Prabhupada, if they're actually following Srila Prabhupada. So, therefore, in order to do that, it's important for us to focus, keeping our focus, you know, the central point is Prabhupada's pleasure, what will please Prabhupada. And then we won't be tearing Prabhupada apart, like Prabhupada gave that metaphorical example, that the disciples sometimes are massaging the guru and they're tearing the guru apart. So we'll be actually pleasing his divine grace to the Prabhupada. Yes, someone will be massaging his arm, another person will be massaging the leg. That's all right. You don't all have to have one part of the body. Isn't it? You share. Just like when Prabhupada was leaving the planet, there were some bodies in each part of the body. They weren't saying, you know, I want that arm. That arm is mine. So, anyway, so in this way, we can control anger, we can control our activities, we can control our mind, and that's the secret that I've utilized in Krishna consciousness, that, you know, I always pull myself back whenever there's like some strong feeling and think that, what would Prabhupada want me to do, or how would Prabhupada want me to think, how would Prabhupada, I mean, and many times there's a tendency to do something different. Like people do things sometimes that may aggravate me or, you know, cause me to not have my needs met. So, but then I take a step back and think, you know, would Prabhupada want me to consider them to be an enemy, to attack them? And then I say, no, Prabhupada would not want that. So therefore, I put aside my own personal interest, my own personal, whether it's anger or whatever type of emotion is arising at that moment. And then I just say, no, I'm going to act in the way of the Prabhupada. And then you know, you feel real good about yourself when you do that. Actually, it really increases your self-esteem. You think, wow, I passed that test. Just like I was hearing the story about Prahlad Maharaj. His son was Virochan. You know the story? And his son did something he didn't please him. And he had to make a choice. There was one girl, anyway, I won't get into the whole story, but there was one beautiful girl that his son was attached to, and there was also a Brahmin who was attached to that particular girl. And it just doesn't work out. You can't divide a girl in two. And we don't believe in polyandry. That means two husbands for one wife. We don't want polygamy either, so we want to follow the footsteps of Lord Ramchandra. Eka Patni Vrata, that's it. You know, one wife, one life, one wife. If you want another wife, be born again. I'm not meaning join the Krishna movement and be born again. But you'll take another birth. So anyway, so Prahlad Maharaj was put into this particular dilemma. You know, who should, because he was told that he could make the judgment, you know, who would be the husband of this pretty girl? His son, who he loved very much. And it's interesting the dynamics, because he loved his son more than an ordinary father would love a son, because he had been deprived of the love of his father. I mean, Hiranyakashipu did not have much love for Prahlad Maharaj. I mean, he was your typical child abuser. I mean, even worse than anything I've ever heard about. I mean, I've very rarely heard of a father putting his child into oil, burning vat of oil, right? I've never heard of that. Or thrown off a cliff, or put under elephants, or poisoned, or put into a viper's, you know, snake pit. So Prahlad Maharaj loved his son very much, but he had to make a judgment as to what was the right thing, whether this Brahmin should marry the girl or his son. And he made the proper judgment. I mean, it's tough sometimes making judgments when your emotions are so strong. It's not easy. You know, emotions are very strong. You know, particularly anger. You're talking about anger is practically uncontrollable. But even, you know, lust or, you know, practically any emotion, and even my desire for a computer is just very strong. when I see the latest Macintosh, I don't like those anymore. But when Ultrabooks, so it's very strong. So therefore, he actually utilized his intelligence. So we have to strengthen our intelligence. It takes some exercise every day. You know, fix it up. What would Prabhupada want? Ask ourselves that question and act in such a way. And then we'll be passing the test and we'll feel real good about ourselves and Krishna will feel real good about us too. So any questions or comments about any points? Yes. Especially Gopal does. Gopal has a very unique relationship with me. Oh, yeah. Poor Gopal. Mother Krishna Priya just said poor Gopal. So what's the question?
And well, that too is Srila Prabhupada. It doesn't make sense. It's hard to understand why people don't think or think that they have the only perspective about who Srila Prabhupada was, because we all have individual relationships.
Well, that's self-centered. That's, you know, the whole concept of thinking I'm God. I know best. I have, you know, I know Prabhupada best, better than any of you. You know, you're not, we have to take into consideration. It's actually a failure of imagination to understand that other people have other perspectives. It's like that whole hippie thing when we were young, that, you know, if I'm not there to perceive something, it doesn't happen. You know, whatever I perceive is reality, whatever I don't perceive is not reality. It's extreme self-centeredness when one thinks that their perspective is the only perspective, either on Krishna consciousness or pleasing Prabhupada or whatever. It's extreme self-centeredness. You know, I know better than you. I know, it was actually interesting. I had an exchange with one of my godbrothers. I was giving my opinion, and he wanted to defeat me. And he said, I'm afraid, Guru Krishna Maharaj, you're surrounded by so many obsequious disciples all the time, so you can't hear any other opinions. I said, you know, I wish my disciples were obsequious. Show me one of them that is. So it's actually obsequious. Obsequious means like a dog that's always sitting there at your feet, ready to do anything for you. You know, roll over, Rover. So it was interesting. But we shouldn't be in a situation where we're surrounded by chumchas. Right? You know, that's a Hindi word for spoons, like yes men or yes ladies. That's actually very dangerous when we're surrounded by people who agree with us all the time. That's one of the most dangerous things. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.